You're listening to LCC Alumni Stories, a show dedicated to highlighting the amazing alumni of Lansing Community College. I'm Steve Robinson, president of LCC, and on each episode, I have the awesome privilege of getting to know one of our many inspiring alums and hearing about their experiences at and since leaving LCC. The LCC alumni community is expansive and far-reaching. They're an incredibly diverse group of people, representative of all walks of life, working in hundreds of industries across the country. LCC Alumni Stories shines a bright light on alumni who make positive contributions to their communities and showcases those who've overcome obstacles and barriers to achieve academic and personal success. These are their dynamic stories. My guest today is Todd Haywood. Todd earned an associate degree from LCC before going on to do amazing things in theater, including directing on Broadway, in advocacy for better LGBTQ plus representation, in healthcare as it relates to HIV education and awareness, and in journalism, exposing large financial scandals, and even serving 2 years on the LCC Board of Trustees. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to talking to you about your multifaceted experience here at LCC, first as a student, then as a trustee. You know, when we came into the studio today, we were talking about your journalism. You do a lot of investigative journalism, and currently you've got the cover story in the City Pulse. Tell me a little bit about this story.
Right. So this was a story based on a murder that happened in December of 2018.
Okay. Here in the Lansing area.
Mm-hmm. Out in Eaton County, actually. Mm-hmm. And it got a lot of headlines at the time because the alleged killer was found walking down the street on Grand Ledge Highway at 5:30 at night at, 30 degree weather, covered in blood.
Oh, my.
And we did a deep dive into it, and we found all kinds of really troubling stuff about the victim, the gentleman who was actually murdered. And so we have a 4,000-word cover story on what was really going on behind the doors of the Red Barn House in Oneida Township.
So you were sharing with me that your investigative reporting was based on Freedom of Information requests, and you had a huge stack of documents, but you've turned that into a piece of investigative journalism about this really traumatic event that happened in our community.
Absolutely. It involves methamphetamine use and abuse. It involves exploitation of homeless young men. It involves BDSM. It involves sexuality, sexual assault, robbery, and instances of young men running from this house covered in blood and beating on the
terrible
windows of neighbors, screaming, "Help me, they're going to kill me." This story is not over. That was one of the things that somebody asked on Facebook after we posted this is, "Why are you talking about this now? It happened in December of 2018.
Well, that's not that long ago.
I said, "Well, because the guy who's accused of killing still hasn't stood trial yet because they keep finding him incompetent mm-hmm. to assist in his own defense."
Well, and I'm really looking forward to, I have not read the story yet. I'm looking forward to reading it. But one of the things you shared with me is the underlying context to this is human trafficking, sexual slavery, things that there's a kind of a stigma to talk about, but are clearly important issues in communities all over the country.
Right. It's a huge issue. And it's, I consider myself pretty well versed in what's happening in the LGBTQ community
okay.
here in Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
And nationally and statewide. But I have to tell you, I had no idea how bad the methamphetamine and sex trafficking activity was, not just in Lansing, but across the state of Michigan and across the United States. It was a real eye-opener for me.
Wow. Well, incredibly important. I'm looking forward to reading your story. But one thing that you just said that I want to make sure we talk about in the first part of the podcast is you were sharing with me that you were one of the first openly gay students at LCC. I don't know if we've kept track. You might be the first out gay man who was elected a trustee of LCC.
I believe I was, actually.
So tell me about that. When were you a student at LCC, and what was it like to be a gay man at that time?
So I started at LCC in 1989. I like to say I was on the five-year plan,
mm-hmm.
Because I kept switching majors.
Switching majors. Okay, right. That happens.
Always really interested in something different every year.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
I came out sort of with on the front page, actually, of the Lansing State Journal, because I was doing a lot of HIV prevention work with homeless LGBTQ youth.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, ran into some folks from a conservative religious organization here in town who were passing out information that was actually false about HIV.
Interesting.
And would have actually put young people in harm's way.
Wow.
And so I raised the red flag and said, wait a minute, this is a problem.
So did you grow up in the Lansing area?
No, I actually grew up in Kalamazoo.
Okay.
I went to Portage Northern High School.
Okay.
And Huskies, go Huskies.
Okay.
Came up here because actually I had both sets of my grandparents were here.
In Lansing. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what brought you to the area and how you decided to come to LCC.
Yeah. And LCC was perfect for me,
mm-hmm.
in that I was not a great high school student, and that is in part because I was struggling with my own sexual orientation.
Uh-huh.
And we know that young people, as they are struggling with that coming out process,
mm-hmm.
struggle with their academic careers,
right,
as well.
Right.
Having the opportunity to come to a community space like LCC,
mm-hmm.
even though it was sort of scary for a lot of people to have sort of the out loud gay guy, the queer guy, as I like to say,
mm-hmm.
Saying, hey, wait a minute, this is not okay. You're discriminating against LGBTQ people.
Right.
It also gave me a sense of empowerment. And I think the most important thing it taught me was you have to speak your truth.
Right.
And that speaking my truth and living my truth has informed everything that I have done since. It informs my journalism. It informs my theater. It informs my politics. It informs my being on the LCC board.
So when listening to you talk, I'm thinking about all the campuses, all the college campuses across the country. I mean, a lot of times when we think of the history of the gay rights movement and culture largely becoming aware of LGBTQ plus issues, it's always focused on, I don't know, big cities, New York, right?
Right.
And listening to your talk, is like this happened, it got at every community college in the country, right? The gay
right.
students at every community college. And at some point, people raise their hand and become their authentic selves, and those communities have to grapple with that happening. And so you were here when that happened.
I not only was I here when that happened, but I think some people would say I probably made that happen.
Okay.
So you have to remember, this is 1989, 1990.
Sure.
So this is the era of Queer Nation, Lesbian Avengers, ACT UP.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot more militant LGBTQ activism than what we see today. The,
right.
The activism today is, frankly, a little bit more milquetoast. It's a lot more policy related.
Okay.
Than it's just simply being recognized as human beings.
Right.
I think the transgender community today,
mm-hmm.
is where the LGB community was in 1989-90 here at Lansing Community College.
Right. And is that because that initial push for recognition is so important at the beginning to start the conversation, to move things forward?
I think that's part of it. But also think, you know, identities shift and
uh-huh.
the narratives change.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the early 90s, we were just coming to terms with our own understanding of our history as queer people.
Uh-huh.
You know, we celebrated Stonewall every year.
Right.
But very few of us were willing to recognize that it was the drag queens and the transgender folks
right.
that led the riots for three nights.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, it was the Stonewall girls, the street hustlers, the prostitutes that really raised the bar
mm-hmm.
for Stonewall and said, we're not going to put up with you arresting us for being our authentic selves anymore.
Right. And so, and just to bring that back to LCC, at a point that you as an activist decide I get to be my authentic self here at this community college, that was part of your overall studies here, and you. What kind of classes were you taking when you were a student here?
So I think there were two layers there that actually fed that for me. One was I was doing substance abuse studying.
Okay.
Because, you know, substance abuse is a huge problem in the LGBTQ community.
Uh-huh.
It's a big problem
generally,
socially, period.
But yeah, certainly.
But
yep.
there is a significant portion of LGBTQ people that struggle with substance abuse disorder,
mm-hmm.
Which we didn't even call a substance abuse disorder at that time, just as a side note. And so I was doing some studying on that, and there was no inclusion of LGBTQ people in those conversations,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
in those classrooms.
Right.
And so I would often ask questions to raise that. I would ask questions about HIV and how it related to IVDU use or mm-hmm. intravenous drug use.
Right.
And the professors, bless them, were interested but didn't have answers.
Right.
So I would go get them the answers and bring it back in. So I sort of became that obnoxious kid who I think, you know, anytime I'd raise my hand in the room, everybody would go, oh, God, the queer guy's going to say something about queer stuff again.
Well, here's my view as a former professor. You can view a student as an annoying kid or an input into the system, right? And to me, it sounds like you had some responsive faculty who welcomed you bringing new topics into the classroom. It's one of the great things about more contemporary approaches to teaching.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, if I'd have been at MSU in some of those intro classes where you had 300 or 400 or 500 people in the classroom, there wouldn't have been the intimacy of 25 people in the
exactly,
classroom.
Exactly.
To have those conversations and those exchanges with the professor that helped me to learn
mm-hmm.
and helped them to learn. And I think ultimately, education is about a shared experience.
Right, right,
right,
right.
We're both learning. We're both discovering.
So did you find that some of your faculty members here were welcoming of the information and vantage points you were bringing into the classroom?
They were. I actually found the administration less open mm-hmm. to having conversations about policy changes mm-hmm. and structural changes.
Right.
And we all know that systemic change takes work.
It does.
And it's hard work, right? I mean, because we're trying to overcome a system that has been in place for as long as our consciousness is around.
Right.
So we have to relearn some things. And that's hard, particularly when you're in power, right?
And particularly in organizations, right?
Right.
Because it's one thing for an individual to learn and grow, but for an organization to learn and grow. And it must be somewhat rewarding for you to even just have a look at the LCC website and see the kind of things that we do in the community to know that maybe the organization wasn't as receptive to equity and openness as it is now when it's really baked into our core values here at LCC.
And I will tell you that part of the reason why it's baked into the core values is because of the work that I did here.
Right, right.
You know, I was on the LCC student government, and this was in, I'd have to go back and look, so don't quote me on this.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever's listening to this, this isn't may not be the right date.
Mm-hmm.
But it was 91, I think. I passed out condoms on campus during mm-hmm. an HIV Black awareness event. And the organization that was doing it was the Black Child and Family Institute. And they had been told explicitly they could not pass out condoms.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, what good is it doing an HIV prevention program if we're not going to give people the tools to prevent HIV?
Right.
So I walked across campus and passed out condoms. And the student government took action and threw me off of student government.
Really?
And then the college itself started taking action to remove me from the college. It made news to Detroit, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
We had Detroit television stations up here.
Mm-hmm.
covering it, because
mm-hmm.
that was a big deal at that point.
Oh, absolutely.
But once we sort of had a settlement that we reached internally, I was welcomed back to the student government. And the first thing that we did was pass a resolution calling on the Board of Trustees to pass a non-discrimination policy that included sexual orientation at the time.
Mm-hmm, which it still does to this day. So, you know, thinking about that, oftentimes, you know, closed systems, they don't change themselves, right? They
right.
require action from outside, and that's what activism is all about.
Right.
Well, that's a fascinating story. That's so cool. Now, after you finished with your studies, you went on and did a number of things. I want to hear a little bit about your theater, because you and I met with some community members talking about theater. Tell me a little bit about your background in the theater and the things you've done with theatrical productions.
Right. So I actually ended up finishing my college degree time here at LCC in 93. I graduated in 93 and was immediately hired as an intern at the Boar's Head Theater, which was our equity house here in downtown. I was the first LCC student to be hired as an intern for the performance there.
Fantastic.
Which was a phenomenal experience. You know, working with John Peakes, who, you know, rest his soul, was an extraordinary human being and a talented actor to watch on stage. Working with people like Dick Hill, who is now dealing with end-stage cancer and is... He is dealing with it with the same lighthearted joy that he has embraced the world before. So, you know, and Dick actually left theater and made his fortune reading the Jack Reacher books.
Oh, really?
So doing audiobooks.
Doing voiceovers like we're doing right now.
Wait, even more than that, because you do character voices when you're doing it too. So, but he became very famous for that. And he lives right here in Lansing. And that's somebody that I had an opportunity to work with, the amazing Carmen Decker, who I got to work with. I then went out and did some touring stuff. I worked with the, what was then the Jackson Shakespeare Festival, but is now the Michigan Shakespeare Festival. I performed on stages there, did a one-man tour where I was like a Mr. Wizard's World sort of thing. Put 100,000 miles on a minivan driving around doing a science of light demonstration thing.
Really?
All this over the
like
East Coast.
This is like a one-man show.
One-man show. I'd show up at 8 o'clock in the morning and set up a laser system and all these props and stuff. And I'd do three or four of those in a day and then pack up the van and drive to the next school district.
Wow.
It was fantastic. It was one of my favorite stories from that actually was being in Rhode Island. I'd been trapped in upstate New York at one point in a hotel where the fire alarms kept going off every 45 minutes, which was a nightmare. But I was able to watch a PBS special about the history of vampiric lore in the Northeast. I had no idea that vampires were a big thing in the Northeast, and yet they were. And so I found out that the last known vampire, and I'm putting that in quote marks because we're on radio and people can't see that, was named Mercy Brown, and she was buried just outside of Providence, Rhode Island. So on a Saturday afternoon, I drove down to the town where she was buried, found her graveyard, and there was a group of Boy Scouts, you know, cleaning up the graveyard, and you know, here I drive up in my minivan with these big black coffin-like cases in it. And I get out and I'm walking the rows of headstones, and one of the kids asked me, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm looking for a vampire." And the bless that poor scoutmaster. He said, "Kids, let's go work over there, way over there." And I said, "No, really." And so I went and I got a book that I had bought that had it, and I said, "Her name's Mercy Brown." We found Mercy Brown's grave, and I sat them down and we read the story of Mercy Brown, which had actually been, there'd been a story published in the Providence newspaper at that time talking about how they dug her up to make sure that she wasn't a vampire for real.
Oh my.
But just to be extra careful, they cut her head off and put it between her legs because that's old vampiric lore that they couldn't rise again. But she had died from TB.
Oh my.
And oftentimes TB, because they didn't fully understand germ disease theory at that point, TB was often thought to be a vampire because it would go through families and people would get paler and paler as they got sicker and sicker. And the thought was that their blood was being drank by their family member that died. So after that, I came back to Lansing, and because I thought I'm going to go out and find my place in the world. And what I found was my place in the world is Lansing, Michigan.
It's a great place.
It's an extraordinary city. I love this city with all my heart. So I came back and I started a Shakespeare company doing free Shakespeare in the local parks. We did that for a decade. There is nothing more extraordinary to me than watching a young person discover the magic of Shakespeare without understanding that they are discovering one of the greatest playwrights in world history.
Well, you and I share a love of Shakespeare. My master's degree was almost in Renaissance drama before I changed my emphasis on the path I'm on now. But, You know, and I'm proud that LCC, I mean, you know our theater faculty well. We regularly perform Shakespeare. You know, this our upcoming production of Romeo and Juliet's going to be amazing. And I'm so happy that you gave that gift of live performance of Shakespeare to this community for so long. So on behalf of everybody in the community, thank you. Thank you for doing that. It's one thing to read those plays, but those plays were designed to be experienced.
They were meant to be heard.
That's right.
They were never meant to be read.
Right. It makes me think, though, I am interested in hearing about your time as an LCC trustee. So you have this experience of being a student. You learned a lot to take you around the country and doing theater in the classroom. You also were an activist on campus and really had a pioneer role in a lot of our equity and equality work here. But tell me the story of coming back as a trustee.
So I came back to Lansing after this tour. And I got involved because there was discussions about how we needed to have a return on our investment, the ROI.
Okay.
And as you know, theater and performing arts in general don't necessarily have a tangible cash return on
investment. Maybe not a quantifiable, but...
But they have a real return on investment.
Oh, absolutely.
In terms of community development, mm-hmm. and social development and creativity alone, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which in and of itself is placemaking. And there was a move to eliminate and cut the dance program.
Mm-hmm.
And I got actively involved with that because...
Mm-hmm. So it was an issue that brought you back as a trustee. I've seen this happen across the country. So there was an issue. It had to do with the dance program, and that's
right.
Okay.
And I lost that argument.
Okay.
I was not a favorite of President Paula Cunningham's at the time. I was not a favorite of Trustee Olga Holden's at the time because they were pretty easy targets for the activism and the arguments about the issues that were at play.
Okay.
And I actually had a friend of mine say, okay, look, it's time for you to either put up or shut up. You got to run for office.
Mm-hmm.
So I got my signatures on the petition, and I turned my petition in 15 minutes before the deadline, mm-hmm. and surprise, ran unopposed.
Unopposed, okay. So you were duly elected.
I was duly elected, and I was concerned because the plan to do the swearing-in ceremony was scheduled after the start date of the term. So I was concerned that I was putting myself in a position where I was actually going to lose my seat because I hadn't taken the oath of office on time.
Hmm.
So I actually held my own swearing-in ceremony. And, you know, to President Cunningham's credit and to, at the time, Brian Jeffries' credit, he was chair. They both came to that swearing in ceremony.
Really? Yeah. I've never heard of that.
Where I explicitly called them out. And, you know, I will tell you, it is a very different animal to be on the inside making those very tough decisions,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which was a new learning process.
So I was going to say that. So it was a learning process for you to become a trustee and be taking a look at these issues from a very different vantage point.
Right. And I often, you know, we do, you have a different credit process now in terms of how you charge. That is a result of my direct advocacy while on the board. Because it was very frustrated. We would get these, oh, we're only going to do a $1 increase in credit hours, but then you would have this lab fee that was like $600.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's being dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
Because oftentimes you're not going to see that lab fee until you get the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to find a new way to do that. And that's sort of how we've gotten to the, I don't know what it's called now, I apologize, but that's how we got to the new sort of formula for formula for how we're charging credits here at LCC.
Interesting. So you served on the board for 2 years.
For 2 years,
uh-huh.
And then I was unelected because there was a slate of union-run folks that were not happy with
so
me.
So did you run for an unexpired term? Is that what happened?
There were a series of resignations,
okay.
over the controversies, over the ROI,
mm-hmm.
And I ran for one of those open seats.
Okay.
And I won it. You know, fair and square.
Uh-huh.
And then I lost it.
Right.
Fair and square.
Right.
And that's okay.
Well, and it is, that's one of the inherent designs of Michigan Community Colleges. The Michigan Community College Act is really specific on this, about the terms of elected trustees, how they're elected. And, you know, there are different models all over the country, but in Michigan, it's an elected model, and that's how the system works. So, well, thanks for your time as a trustee. Now, just thinking back, though, you've been connected to Lansing for so long, and it's wonderful to hear, you know, how much you love this city and the things you've done for it. What are some other thoughts that you have about LCC and its impact on the community? I know it's an organization that's special for you. What are your thoughts about LCC?
So I think one of the things that I hear this still occasionally in the community, and it drives me crazy, is the idea that somehow this is last chance college.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is not last chance college. This is first chance college.
Yeah.
This is that opportunity as an 18-year-old who hasn't really figured out where they're at in the world and what they want their place to be in the world,
mm-hmm.
to come and discover.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that is why I am so committed to the mission of LCC,
right.
and to community colleges in general.
Yep.
It's not just an opportunity for cheap early education to move into a four-year degree.
No.
This is an opportunity for you to explore your own vision, your own values, your own ideas, your own personality.
Yes.
LCC made me the person I am today.
Wow.
I would not be the excited, inquisitive, and frankly sometimes pain in the rear that I am had I not come to LCC. LCC gave me everything that I needed to be a success in the things that I have pursued.
I love hearing that. And I also appreciate that enthusiastic explanation of all the things a great community college can be. And I will tell you, but just about every community college across the country has some kind of pejorative, nasty nickname. I collect them, so I could tell you what they are. But there's a huge pushback against that right now. And I think that you see a growing understanding of the value that local community colleges have. And I want to thank you for being such an enthusiastic booster and supporter of Lansing Community College. And Todd, it was so wonderful talking to you. I really enjoyed hearing the story, especially the long-term impact of your activism as a student. We are a very different college. Just like we're a very different country, but that didn't happen without brave people taking a proactive step forward and demanding change. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a great conversation.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks a lot, Todd.
Thank you.
LCC Alumni Stories is recorded and produced by Steve Robinson on LCC's downtown campus. The soundtrack, Who Told You, is licensed through DeWolf Music and was performed by Ian McCanty. Thanks for listening. Learn more about what our alumni have been up to at lccconnect.org. And if you're an LCC alum and want to share your story with me, send me an email at steve_robinson@lcc.edu. Until next time, keep learning. This is LCC Connect on WLNZ 89.7 FM Lansing.